Around the NFL Podcast wants Eric Davis in the Hall of Fame.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. If you are not baseball inclined, Eric Davis was a five-tool star for the Cincinnati Reds baseball team, Wes's favorite team, and injuries conspired to keep him out of the Hall. But perhaps, maybe, as a nod to Wes, the baseball gods and really the voters. Now you get dicey where you're counting on the voters for a miracle. Put Eric Davis in. But great player, Eric Davis. I used to tease Wes. He was no Darryl Strawberry, who is another superstar of that ilk in the late 80s. But Eric Davis is probably a more well-rounded player.
For some reason, I always just, when I think of the Reds, I just think how silly it is that their original name was the Red Stockings, and how silly it remains that there are two baseball teams named the Red Sox and the White Sox, and there were the Red, and the Reds are the Red Legs. I don't know. Yeah. It just seems silly.
I think Sox is a newer, Stockings was the word of the day back then. It wasn't sure as off-putting, but I mean, I have a suggestion. Yeah. The Hall of Fame, the Baseball Hall of Fame, is up in Cooperstown, correct? I mean, I've been there as a child, a very nice, it's a nice part of the country, very serene, but maybe, you know, we've got a lot of listeners, a lot of power behind this show. You know, it's kind of in vogue to storm places of security these days, not all in good faith, but this would be. We storm Cooperstown and force Eric Davis's presence into the building. If they do bust, we could have someone. I'm sure someone would be good at that, creating an Eric Davis bust.
I initially liked where you were going, because I thought you were going with grassroots campaign and start building something on the internet in Wes's memory. And then you went the other way, which maybe connects us with another level of insurgency. I don't know.
No, I'm not. I would say that was inglorious what happened in our nation's capital. This would be brute force with heart behind it. Something positive.
I don't know. I mean,
I know Greg would not be.
General Rosenthal, your thoughts?
I'm not shocked that Mark was the one to propose an insurrection. And could be. We've often said that Mark would be a great cult leader. If he needed to be. But I don't think this is the spot for it. Plus, it's still COVID time. So let's hold it off. I don't, you know, the poor people that are there working, you know, it's a nice place. They're doing good
work. We can table it for now.
I kind of feel bad, too, because that is your style, Mark. But like January 6th kind of ruined insurgency a little bit.
I have no history of storming building. It's not my style. I mean, I think it looks bad because of what's just happened, and I get that, and that was bad. But this would be like sometimes when you storm a building, it's for good reasons. But again, there's no support here for it.
I mean, there was plenty of that too.
There's zero support.
I don't even know if they have security guards up there in Cooperstown.
It's like the British sleeping in the middle of the night. We would have our way.
Speaking of the late, great Chris Wessling, checking in on that GoFundMe. My own. We are closing in on $300,000 raised for Lakeisha and Link. How about that? How awesome is that? So if you haven't made any donation, it's okay if you don't, because obviously everyone has different financial situations. But if you have anything to give, and it doesn't have to be a lot, that is going towards the best cause imaginable. So check that GoFundMe out wherever you find a hero social media page. All right. Still really weird. 3 weeks tomorrow, Wes gone. But we soldier on as a podcast right now. We have a really good show today. A bombshell piece dropped in The Athletic. They do really good stuff over at The Athletic. That has been a successful experiment in sports media, if you ask me. Not trying to get a job there. I'm just saying, I like good sports journalism, and I often find myself reading The Athletic. And three members of The Athletic wrote a combined to write expose, if you will, on the situation between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. And when I woke up this morning, boys, I didn't think much of what was going on in Seattle other than Russell Wilson being a little cranky. You read this piece
Mr. Unlimited.
Yes, you read this piece by Michael Sean Dugar, Mike Sando and Jason Jenks, and you have a whole different perspective, Greg. And we're going to have Michael Sean Dugar.
Well, we can clear that up.
We'll have to ask him
in minutes to talk about what's going on in Seattle, because it's getting grim. Also, a little more QB talk. Another big veteran involved with some drama that seems to be getting cleared up. And then at the end of the show, vision boards are big right now. We're going to build one for the 2021 season. But let's start, yes, by hitting some quarterback news. Let's go, Ricky.
Mr. Unlimited.
All right, let's start with what's going on in Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger, this has been a bit of a soap opera playing out for the past couple of weeks about whether the soon-to-be 39-year-old quarterback would return for another season. Now it's happening. We got this. Aditi Kinkabwala, our own Aditi, on NFL Network on Wednesday reported that the Steelers had confirmed they want him back, and then it became public when Steelers president Art Rooney announced Big Ben will return for the 2021 season. He deemed it a productive meeting that he had with his franchise quarterback. We don't know what the contract numbers are, but honestly, who cares? If you're a Steelers fan, you're either happy or bummed about this. Greg, I think you had said that you thought there was a real chance he was gone. I was never in that camp. What do you think about what happens with the Steelers now? Do you think it's just Big Ben and Dwayne Haskins with some Mason Rudolph, or is there more intrigue to come here?
They said they wanted to add quarterbacks, and that was after adding Haskins. So I don't think – they might not be done. I also want to see how this plays out. I think it was – shaped strangely that like Big Ben is back. Well, he's not back yet until the contract's signed. By all indications, it's going to happen. But I am curious, you know, about the details. They must have had some broad agreement about the rough way that they're going to do it, whether he's taking a pay cut, whether they're giving him guaranteed money into next year or not. Like, I think all of that matters because I think it tells you where they're at. For instance, Drew Brees last year, the contract he signed indicated clearly it was going to be his last year. So I'm curious if that's the type of deal they do with Ben. And I always leave like that little door open, even with an owner's statement, that things can go wrong and feelings can get hurt when you're talking contract. You know what I mean? It's just been a little strange that it's like this announcement, he's back. Well, he's not back. What the agent and what the owner said is that they're going to negotiate a contract and he's expected to be back.
I mean, I would say compared to it's the off season of discontent with quarterbacks all over the place. Compared to some of the situations bubbling out there, this feels more peaceful. I mean, I guess I'm with you, Greg. But when the owner comes out and says what he said, I would be surprised if they suddenly have to.
I'd be shocked. I just am wondering if it's there's happening. One moment of consternation, and I am just curious on what the details are, because that's a big part of the story for me.
I think it's interesting. It's an interesting scenario with Steelers fans in general, because I think that there was definitely a pocket of them out there that were emotionally prepared or very prepared to say goodbye to him after the way that season ended. But part of it is like, look, I mean, that's great. You have Dwayne Haskins on the roster and Mason Rudolph and all these ham and eggers, but a better version of Big Ben is still the best option there. I would not be surprised, though. They have to be forward-thinking. They have to think about, and they're not in a great place in the draft to do this, but they've swung at a couple quarterbacks in the draft, and I think fully missed entirely. They've never found his real heir apparent, and it's not Dwayne Haskins, as far as I could see, and it's not Mason. I mean, if it's Dwayne Haskins, we're going to need to see a lot more than we've seen. Right? I mean,
honestly, I think it would be irresponsible, quite frankly, with the roster that's in place and how many really strong players, even they have to make some moves in free agency. This is going to be a good roster that returns in 2021. There is certainly the idea, and I know Sheck, who's, you know, Steelers homer, and we all know that, put out the theory that perhaps Big Ben changed his game in relation to the record of the team, and then by the time they tried to ramp it up, it was too late. Okay, maybe that's the case. Or Big Ben started to fall off a cliff last year, and the guy that shows up 6 months from now is even worse than that guy. I just think the one thing, I think it's the right move to bring him back, but I think it would be the wrong move to say, well, if Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins or someone in that realm is our backup plan, I think you're setting yourself up for big failure. I would like to see them take a swing, whether it's in the draft or to go get a veteran quarterback, even like an Andy Dalton type, not to keep using Andy Dalton as this fallback guy, but maybe like somebody like that, that would bring proficiency to the backup position in case the Steelers need it, because there is a chance they will.
There is, and I'm with you on the rosters, you know, intriguing. It's top heavy. Really, some really good players on defense. They have the bones to be a good defense. Some good skill position players. But you mentioned Sheck's theory about him, you know, not wanting to get hit. Okay, that's the offensive line's issue, which basically collapsed and has been falling apart since Mike Munchak, their coach, left. Here's what their free agency situation is on the offensive line. Left tackle, Villanueva, who's been there forever, really didn't play great last year. Free agent, Pouncey, retired. Another starter, Kevin Filer, I believe it's pronounced, who started at both tackle and guard and had like 1,000 snaps the last two seasons, also a free agent. So, you know, a group, DeCastro not playing as well as he used to. So that's a big chunk, and that is a big concern. And I suspect that is Kevin Colbert, their GM's number one concern right now and priority for the offseason, not the quarterback situation after this is handled.
These things just never end well. And Big Ben is not, you know, he has not been embracing the Tom Brady diet for the past 5 years. I mean, nor do I buy that he's just a big pudgy man either. I think he's working harder than some would believe. But this version of Big Ben, with one of the worst teams in the league at rushing the ball down the stretch last year, I mean, it was just abominable, behind a really shaky offensive line situation. You know, Greg, you just mentioned it. I mean, that's the kind of thing where, are we going to get Brett Favre's, you know, 2010 season, and you could see a whole bunch of quarterbacks that Big Ben is just sub, you know, performance level. If you're anyone else in the AFC North who's been getting killed by Big Ben for the past 15 years, this
like, who
is
would
delicious.
That be? Like, who well, would that be?
It's really every team in that division, if you think about it. I mean, the Ravens are the only one that I think they put a hurt on him. But how delicious it would be for it just to be a continuation of what happened in January. Not for Pittsburgh fans.
I'm just going to become a Browns fan now, by the way, and draft off of Sessler's
I was
going to
say, because I've for a long time posited that Greg has it out for Big Ben and the Steelers. And it's all right. That's fine. I understand. You have your reasons.
You check the track record, and that is not true. No one has predicted that.
Well, you just pumped
better.
Your fist when you talked about the Steelers taking a multi-year dirt nap.
Now it feels time for the dirt nap. But before, I was predicting them to the Super Bowl every year. You guys would make fun of me. I had too much faith. That would annoy Mark.
That is fair. That is a fair retort. And Mark, I'm totally on board with you having these feelings after all the years of misery. Obviously, I feel the same way about a certain team that Greg actually loves. All right, let's stick a pin in Big Ben talk, but let's continue to do some veteran quarterback talk, some surprising veteran quarterback talk. And we want to welcome to the show, first time on the Around the NFL podcast, and he wrote, along with his colleagues at The Athletic, a banger. I call it a straight-up banger on the situation involving Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. He is Michael Sean Dugar. Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast. Michael Sean, I know you go by Mike too. Like, how are we doing this?
Mike's fine. I just feel bad. I don't have any books in my background. You guys all have books.
What about the plant? You need the plant too.
We don't read any of these books though. Like that, they're props. They're fake plants and books we've never read. So don't be concerned.
Okay. I won't feel too bad then.
Mike, so you, like I said, wrote this piece that's blowing up, today on the internet. You also have a really good podcast I was listening to, Seahawks, Man to Man, where you were talking about this situation as well. And I think let's start here. Everyone is surprised on the outside of this that all of a sudden there is a possibility that this Russell Wilson Seahawks, or maybe the Russell Wilson Pete Carroll marriage, won't work. But someone that's on the inside like you, that's been tracking this team, is this something that we should have seen coming as a volcano that is bubbling and ready to explode?
I don't know how people from the outside could have necessarily seen it coming, but it does remind me of...
Attention, 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 attention. If you plan to watch the, you know, movie Den of Thieves ever, Mike is going to spoil it for you.
Yeah, major spoiler alert ahead.
Yeah.
I'm a big movie guy, so forgive me, but like the movie Den of Thieves, I think it's on Netflix or whatever. Like you get to the end, spoiler, and O'Shea Jackson Jr.'s character is like the mastermind. And you're like, huh, should I have seen that? And they do all of these things where it goes back and you're like, oh, okay. Like I should have seen that coming. The scenes at the bar, like all these little lines, you put it together. Like that's where it is. Like if you watch the movie the first time, you're like, well, how was I supposed to put that together? And then they reveal it and you're like, oh, there were all of these breadcrumbs throughout the course of the film that like leads up to the end. And that's kind of what is going on here. Like, yeah, if you're watching from afar, if you only turn in on Seahawks games when I'm prime time or whatever, or America's Game of the Week, you're like, oh, okay, whatever. The Seahawks need to fix some things, whatever. But then if you like really go back and read Russ's quotes from 2015 or 16 or 17, like every old Russ press conference is going to get so many more views after this. Now people are going to be like, oh, how could I have missed this? And you're going to hear the quotes about legacy, the Drew Brees references, the Tom Brady references, the LeBron James references, and then you're going to get to this point and be like, oh, no, I get why that guy would be frustrated to this point that he wants out.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that analogy. And I was sort of thinking too of like World War One started, and it's one of the few things I remember from history when Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
We're a lot older than you, right? Mike. So,
well, no,
you
know. I wasn't around during that time, but his assassination basically kicked off World War One. But there was a bunch of stuff happening that led to it, but they called that the powder keg. And I loved the way that you kind of laid these little breadcrumbs about what's been happening with Russell Wilson for so long. Would it be fair to call an inciting incident him sitting at the Super Bowl, watching Tom Brady win a Super Bowl with another team away from his comfortable home in New England with Antonio Brown, who he helped recruit to the organization because he has a huge voice in Tampa Bay, obviously. And Russell Wilson sitting up there thinking, I don't have any of these things. I've worked as hard as anyone. And in his world, does he feel like he lacks a voice? And can it be really fixed with the Seahawks? Or is this thing just heading towards a breakup?
I'll add something to Russ's frustration at the Super Bowl, because all of those things are correct. But also, the last time Russ played in the Super Bowl, who did he lose to? Right? Like, Brady. It's like, and how many Super Bowls has Brady been to since the Seahawks lost?
400.
In 24. Yeah, you know, like, if you're Russell, it's not. He doesn't only see himself as, like, someone who can be Brady's equals. Like, they were adversaries on the biggest stage, right? And he was inches away from beating him. And then he thought, I'll get back here, right? I'll get back here. That's what Russell thought. And only Brady's been back. I think that fueled it as much as everything you just mentioned, Antonio Brown, Tom Brady having a good old line, Tom Brady getting to handpick players like Gronk and AB, Tom Brady having more say over the offense. You know, Bruce Arians just said it. Like, I had to step back and let Brady do his thing. You know, Russ reading that, like, huh, must be nice. Like, it all came to a head. The Super Bowl was like all of those things at once. But I think that's another detail people forget. It's like, yeah, Russ lost to Tom Brady last time and hasn't been back there since. And Tom's been there, yeah, 50 million times since then. And now where does it go from here? Like, I think everyone's going to ask me that today, but I think really everyone knows the answer. If it was good, right? If they thought it was going to be good, would they be on, you know, TV, Russell saying, I'm frustrated, citing how many times he's been sacked, like 394. He's been citing that number like a cult. It's like a campaign for a presidential run, 394, like, and spinning it as if it's the Seahawks' fault. A lot of it is. But like,
it's not all his fault.
No, that's another conversation. It's not all one person's fault. But I mean, the fact that they've used that as like their campaign slogan, like, I'm frustrated getting hit too much. I don't think that if this was like a fixable situation, that they would be doing that. You know what I mean?
I hear you. And that helps to answer, you know, one question I had is like, why does this all have to be so public or kind of clumsily public? And you guys did an awesome job. Everyone should check it out, of kind of showing the way that him and his camp have put this messaging out and make, you know, it's made it very clear. He's aggressively trying to do something. He's trying to make people uncomfortable. But it gets to the other question I had, which is more of like an existential question. Reading this article, and maybe that's why Russ is trying to do this. You tell me, you know the situation maybe better, is like, why wouldn't they just get rid of Pete Carroll then? Like, and that maybe goes to who's really owning this team and who's in charge, and that's confusing. But do you think there's any way, like, Russ is putting all this out there almost to let to let other people know at the higher points of the Seahawks organization that, like, maybe if you did have to choose, to me as a fan, if I was a fan, it'd be a little crazy to choose Pete Carroll over Russ.
Yeah, all my friends and all my group chats are like, Mike, can we just pick Russ? Like, why would we?
Right, roll with, right.
You know, I think one of my friends said, I'd rather have 10 years of Russell than 4 more of Pete, right? And it's like, yeah, no, most people would. But I do think, yeah, your point about, like, sending a message not just to the public but the higher-ups is important too. I asked Pete on, like, January 11th. I said, who in the building holds you accountable, right? Because he controls personnel. Woo! On top of the on-field product. I said, who can tell you the truth? Like, who can be harsh with you? And he mentioned a bunch of dudes that are under him. You know, and two of them you mentioned were his kids, right? One of whom is mentioned in the story as, like, having quit his job twice during the season and only to come back later. Hmm. So, like, I thought that was very telling. Like, he didn't mention anyone who cuts his checks. He mentioned people who he ultimately cuts their checks. And that's not really how accountability works. Right? You know, like, if I worked for my dad, I never have, but I doubt I'd be the only person in the building he can listen to. You know, I just don't think that's how that works. So I think a message of accountability is being sent by Russell in his camp, too. It's like, I can't tell this guy anything. Because no one holds him accountable. He can throw challenge flags and sign bad alignment and make bad trades or do whatever. And I just got to go out there and get hit by Aaron Donald. And I got no one I can go snitch to or report to. You know, like, that's very frustrating if you're doing that for 9 years.
And Russell Wilson, 32 years old, he's professed that he wants to play 10, 15 more years. He wants to go the Brady path. And he's just maniacal enough where he might actually be able to do that. Pete Carroll's going to be 70 in September. So it just, these are things that need to be factored in if it's going to be a either or scenario. And I just want to, first of all, Den of Thieves, you kind of ruined it. So I don't know if I'm going to watch it now. But
definitely should watch it.
I will say that I haven't seen that, but we have had the star of that film's father, Ice Cube, on this show. So how about that? That's a good job by us. We nailed that. Promoting the big three.
You definitely should watch the movie, though. It's really good. Even with that spoiler, I bet you this. Even if you watch it, even though I spoiled it for you, you still won't be able to, at first watch, put together all the breadcrumbs. It won't be until the very end.
Wow, this sounds like the new Usual Suspects. Now, let me ask you this, because you said this on your podcast. You'd be surprised if he's being Russell Wilson, the Seahawks quarterback in 2022. Now, when you said that with your co-host, was that caught up in the heat of the moment? Or do you honestly believe that this is something that's heading toward divorce?
No, I think and anyone who's, like, written a big story, like, in journalism or reported one in radio or TV or whatever, you know that you left things on the cutting room floor. Right? And there's a million things that we heard and could just didn't make the story. Right. We had to trim it. And so, like, I know, like, how bad this is. And yeah, I know that there's two things that we didn't put in the story that I think are also really important. Russell had a son in July, his first biological son. Sierra has a son from another marriage. He named that son Wynn. His name is Wynn, like Harrington Wilson. Pete Carroll wrote a book in 2010. The title of the book is Win Forever. Like, these dudes are obsessed with winning. Mm. And they will do whatever it takes to win. That's the one thing they're always going to be aligned on. But if they don't do that, and they can't agree on why they're not winning, which is ultimately what the real disconnect is here, they can't coexist because they're too obsessed with that idea of winning. Like, so when I said, yeah, I don't think he'll be the quarterback in 2022, I'm projecting them not winning the Super Bowl or getting there. If they get there, then that's different. They win it. Obviously, winning fixes a lot of things. But I think that's the only thing that can fix this situation is winning. Mm. You got to win. These two dudes have made it known. The only way they can more make it known that they want to win is they go file a trademark like Chad Johnson did to change their names
right.
to win. You name your firstborn son Win, you care. Like,
that's a lot of pressure.
That's maniacal.
You know, like, I think that's the only thing that can fix the situation right now.
So, but you think next year. So you do think this is almost setting, and I heard this from someone just asking about this today too. They thought it was setting the table for next year, that this is all priming the pump a little bit and that a trade would be maybe less likely this year, but more likely next year.
And I think it's yes to answer that. And then it's like think about the narrative construction here. If the Seahawks do come up short next year, who is everyone going to blame? You're blaming the Seahawks, right? Pete? It's like, yeah, exactly. Pete Carroll, the Seahawks, they're going to look at it and say, you guys didn't give Russell Wilson what he wanted. You guys are idiots. And so now he wants to leave. Whether that's right or wrong, they've done a good job, and I mean, rest of his camp, of like putting that as the message. Like, we are the victims here, guys. I am the superstar quarterback here who has played with bottom five O-lines, like, I want to say, like, 7 of his 9 years, and that's just not good enough, right? They're bottom, like, half of the league all the time in O-line spending, other than which year? 2013. when they spent the most on the O-line in the whole league. Would they do that year? Win the Super Bowl. So, like, there's all these arguments that they've put out there and used it, like I said, like a presidential campaign. So if we're right back here next year and the Seahawks weren't in the Super Bowl, whose fault is it going to look like? And then the Seahawks are going to have to get rid of the best quarterback in franchise history.
I would ask this because, I mean, it's this Carroll-Russell Wilson power struggle. And I love that you meant, like, the title of the whole thing is about power and control. And, I mean, this story is as old as time. But then you got John Schneider involved in this, too. And some of the juiciest stuff in there was that John Schneider was prepared to draft Patrick Mahomes, that they were very high on Josh Allen. I mean, that's the kind of thing that if you're Russell Wilson, you're thinking, excuse me? I mean, who's holding him accountable? Because when you talk about the offensive line not coming together over the course of 7 or 8 seasons, I look at the front office and the GM too, and they've certainly had some against the grain draft picks over the year.
Yeah, and that's where Pete Carroll actually takes a lot of that blame too, because he oversees personnel. He was hired before John. Right? He's essentially John's boss. John can't make a pick until Pete okays it. I think Russell is like an example of that in 2012. You know, John is from Wisconsin, worked for the Packers, and here comes this 5'10" like guy who's balling at Wisconsin. And John's like, hey, we should take this guy. But no matter how much John wanted him, if Pete was like no, then they wouldn't have took Russell. Right? Like Pete has to okay everything. So yeah, the Seahawks have taken, I think, more alignment in the draft than any team since 2012, I want to say, or maybe 2010. They're just not very good at it. Right. So that goes to not only power and control, it's like a lack of faith. You know, if I'm Russell and I'm like, hey, Pete, can we get some better alignment? It's like, yeah, chill. We got this. It's like, well, no, you don't. You don't got it. Like maybe I should have some control over the situation. And it's like, well, no, you can't. And now we have, again, like you said, oldest time, power and control driving two people away from one another.
They haven't had a great defense in 5 years. And if Pete Carroll wants to remember life without Russell Wilson, just throw on some Chaz Whitehurst tape, you know, or Matt Flynn era, which never really happened, or even Tarvaris, who played okay. But it's like, man, you better be careful what you wish for.
Awesome work by Mike and also Mike Sando, Jason Jenks at The Athletic. Please check out that article if you want to be informed on this situation. And before we say goodbye, Mike, and I'm going to check out Den of Thieves.
You definitely need to. I watched a bunch of heist movies over the last month, and that was one of my favorites.
I've got one for you, by the way. It's Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants 2 is that's one where you on the third or fourth viewing, the layers become evident.
It's like, hey, Colin, where are the pants? It's a huge heist picture. Mike, I heard you say pineapples on pizza is a good thing. I don't know where you're from originally, Mike. Don't want to judge, but that's a terrible take. But I'm going to give you the platform here to explain why pineapples on pizza is a good thing.
See, pizza, like the reason like cheese pizza, I think is so great because it's just like it's a blank canvas. Okay. And you can just experiment. You can do whatever you want with it. You can get creative. And there really are no limitations. There's another movie reference. It's a Cuba Gooding Jr. Movie. I can't remember the name of it at the moment, but he's trying to pitch everyone to think outside the box. And he's like, you guys want to think outside the box. What you really need to realize is there is no box. Right? Just let your mind wander. And I'm like, when I thought, I was like, I saw that movie when I was a kid. And it was just like, yeah, it's pretty trippy. Fighting
Snow
Temptations.
Snow Dogs too. Yeah, that was good.
It's a great like way to look at like pizza, hot dogs, just anything like, I debate all the time with my friends, like whether a hot dog is a sandwich. It's just great. You can just free your mind when it comes to food. Like, let your mind roam. Put some pineapples on that pizza, man. It's going to taste great.
Right. I'm with you. We get pineapple and jalapeno in our house all the time.
Thank you.
I'm all about it.
All right. Listen, I'll be cool about this. I just feel some foods are sacred. Pizza is one of them. But listen, that's why it's a great world. We can do what we want and eat what we want. And Mike, thank you for joining the show. And we'd love to have you on again because you're good at your job.
If I come back, I'm definitely going to have all my books.
Right.
I'm not going to be lacking next time. Thank you guys for having
good stuff.
Me.
Thanks, Mike. There Appreciate he goes. It. Awesome stuff. Michael Sean Dugar. You can follow him on Twitter. And yes, again, over at The Athletic. You know, he also within that report by The Athletic, Russell Wilson's camp had broached trade destinations with Seattle to the Dolphins, Jets, Saints, and Raiders. And then right before we came on today, Adam Schefter reported, so as this thing continues to mushroom, that Wilson has not demanded a trade, according to his agent. But Wilson told the Seahawks he really wants to play in Seattle If a trade were considered, the only teams he would go to are the Cowboys, Saints, Raiders, and Bears. First of all, Jets aren't on that list, but I don't know if that's an issue for me personally. It's so transparent, this drama that's playing out. And Russell Wilson being involved is a big reason why, because that's just kind of his thing. But it does surprise me, even after that conversation, again, where I went to bed last night and where we are now, that this thing is as bad as it is. It kind of all blew up here.
Well, and to Mike's point, I feel like now Russell Wilson's been trying to drop these breadcrumbs pretty hardcore. You know, right. He's been trying. It's almost like people weren't really listening because people like us think, well, why would they ever get rid of Russell Wilson? You know, I remember even talking about it when he went on Jimmy Fallon, and that was a little bit of a story, and they wrote about that. It was like, well, this isn't really going to happen. You know, this isn't too serious, but it's coming there for a reason. It reminds me of that SI article where, like, it was all his bros, and it was like Entourage. It's like, we're not Entourage, but that is my favorite show. That's what Russ said.
And no, don't say that.
He's still got the same. He's still got the same agent as he did back then, and it just. I know, you know, I guess the conventional wisdom is maybe it's next year, but I don't know. This seems pretty ugly. The
How
nature
do you go
of this,
through another year? Like, that's, this, that kind
seems
of
pretty
that timeline
tricky.
Feels weird to me.
It's pretty rough. And the fact
Consider
that
the timing on the calendar, though, too. I mean,
no, I get it. It logic says maybe emotions subside a little bit over the course of the off season and you calm down. But the whole, like, political way of looking at it, like the messaging, I thought that's a brilliant way to put it, that he's got these like campaign points. And it's like, how is that flying with teammates? You know, how is that flying with his offensive line? Because I'm sure some of them are thinking, okay, well, Tom Brady's never taking those sacks, Russ. Like, yeah, you're right. You could have put the worst offensive lines around Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and they would cut that sack total in 50%. It's just a fact. Like, quarterbacks... sacks are a quarterback sack. It's both. I mean, both things can be true. It can be the offensive line, but it can also be Russ. And I'm sure they're not loving that. And you see some of his old teammates, and that was like the huge last story about Russell Wilson was that SI story where the defense and the coddling of Russell Wilson. There's just a lot there. I loved it. This is one of those stories I'll remember. I feel like this story is really planting a flag,
you know,
in his career.
It's complicated too, though. You mentioned that, and everyone knows Russell Wilson holds on to the ball, and that's going to drive up sack totals and make an offensive line look worse, and that's certainly fair. But there is the other side of it. The reason he's going to go to the Hall of Fame one day is he is a magician in the pocket. He's made so many great plays, and there's a reason he's been playing for 9 years, and they've gone to the playoffs 8 years, and he's won a Super Bowl and nearly won another. He's a special talent, and I think one thing that they hit on in the article is that, like, the let Russ cook era, as short as it was in 2020, was incredible. And then over the course of one bad game that led to a sit down with Pete Carroll, or Carroll sidled up next to him and basically told him to get his S together. And then the next game, they didn't play well either. And then it was over. That opportunity that he had been waiting for to lead the offense in the way he believes he can started off on a record-setting pace. They go through a little valley, and then it's taken away from him. And I can understand that being the source of a lot of frustration and anger for Wilson as well.
I could see that. But, I mean, at the same time, there's DK Metcalf saying that defense has just figured out what they were doing. Greg, I think you make a great point about if this is going to go on even for another year, that we're a long way away from Dan Marino buying his offensive lineman isotoner gloves, which has been escalated to, you know, quarterbacks treat their linemen like kings because your life is in their hands on that field. And you've opened the offseason by setting every one of them on fire. This just feels like it's a campaign, but it's a campaign that doesn't have a wide opening for a fruitful, happy ending. The Seahawks era feels a little bit over to me now. A lot else can happen. I'm just saying, we're a long way away from Carroll and Russell Wilson being attached at the hip, and everything just seems so, you know, peaceful and hunky dory. I hate that hate that word, but for so long, and now it just feels so messy and it's so public.
It's fascinating, though. It's really a great story.
I mean, it's a great story. But
for us.
And I don't think you should ever badmouth or use your platform or unhappiness with the team to chop down teammates, which he is doing on some indirect level. But also, you know, this isn't Joe Thomas and, you know, Kevin Mawai and Quentin Nelson on this line in Seattle. Like, he wants better guys there. He doesn't want a lot of those guys there because he doesn't think they can play.
Brady's ruined this for everyone. LeBron a little bit too, but that basketball is such a different sport because I don't blame him for using the power that he has. He has some absolutely good points. None of this would probably be happening if the Seahawks had a top eight defense at any point in the last 5 years. They've been totally mediocre. If they had a good defense, we're not talking about it. But I think Brady, you know, has given this idea, especially in football, that's so wrong. It's like, not everyone gets to win, bro. It's like, Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest of all time. He hasn't been to a Super Bowl in a decade. Ben Roethlisberger, same. Drew Brees went once. And it's just like so hard to put everything together that makes you win. It's not saying anyone's right or wrong, but it's just so hard.
Yeah. Tom Brady ruined a lot of things for a lot of people, including my 20s and 30s. What the next thing coming here, by the way, is... and it's put it in stone, okay? Might even put a sandwich on it, but I won't. The Seahawks are going to disappear from his social media accounts very soon. That's the next step in this.
I love it. And I also, the whole idea of New York not being on that second list, there was that nugget that Sierra, an entertainer who is attracted to either L.A. or the Big Apple, longs to be in New York to some degree. So, and the Jets, by the way, if you're all these teams that want to trade for Russell Wilson, you're not going to ship a bunch of like late round picks. I mean, the Jets could offer Seattle a fresh new start. I never would rule the Jets out.
You know what they could do? They could just say, hey, those two first round picks you stupidly gave us for a safety, we'll come back to you. Give us the quarterback. Let's fly. I'll give you know, it would hurt, but we'll give you, you know, Quinn and Williams.
And by the way, you got to give him number two overall.
If you give him number two overall, you could. That's the trump card that the Jets have right now. That they won't, you know, if you're a Jets fan, hope that they have normally. That if they want to make the big move at quarterback, now is the time because you have that number two overall pick, whether it's Watson or Wilson. You've got that. You might not ever have that again.
Stick a pin in that because that's going to come up a little bit later. All right. Ricky, the Den of Thieves thing. You're younger than us. Are you plugged in on Den of Thieves?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
I'm a little nervous that Mike is going to catch some heat for, you know, pulling the like Kevin Spacey at the end of Usual Suspects. Like, you usually don't give away the big twist. Maybe you could put like a spoiler alert in post there or something.
Yeah,
like,
but
give people
a
little bit more time.
Was it a big giveaway though? It was sort of
It sounded like it was a.
I thought it was bold, though. Suddenly, it's him versus Netflix. His name becomes elevated and magnified. I mean, it's a power move, and I enjoyed it.
It would be funny if we stopped the show right there, and Ricky's voice or Dan's voice comes in. We insert it, and it says, "Attention! If you plan to watch the movie Den of Thieves Mike is going to spoil it for you.
Yeah, major spoiler alert ahead.
Yeah."
Okay, let's take what you just said, and I'll put it before, too. And then you guys can hear it again right now in real time, too.
Okay. Well, it sounds like our listeners are the ones who lose out, but sometimes that's how things go.
It's not the first time.
And one last thing in this whole quarterback talk. Deshaun Watson tweeted today, loyalty is everything. Don't you ever, caps, ever, forget it. And the Texans can play their little cute game right now and act like they can just ignore this and it's going to go away. It's not going to go away. The power dynamic has shifted in our league. And if your superstar is unhappy, it is going to tear your franchise apart unless you somehow fix things. And if you can't fix things, you got to move them. And we'll see if Seattle gets to that point. But Houston certainly seems like they're at that point, and maybe they're just in denial right now.
I mean, and speaking of sandwich bets, I had one on Big Ben as the Houston Texans week one starter. I will be paying you in sandwiches.
That was easy. That was easy.
That was like a drunken moment with no alcohol involved. I don't know what I blacked out mentally.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Let's get into it. Vision board. What's a vision board? It's big right now. Okay, and I'll give you a little bit of an example of a vision board being successful. my wife, the ladies are into this. Now, I don't want to get tagged as being a sexist. Like, oh, no, men like vision boards, too. Sure. I'm sure there are plenty of men crafting vision boards at this very moment.
Lots of men.
But the ladies love the vision board. My wife, the wonderful Emily, she put together a vision board because we were looking for our first house. And guess what? Not 2 months after she put together the board, we found our house. So I feel like that is, it works. I mean, there it is. There is the proof in the pudding.
Speak it into existence.
That's what it's about. It's about taking something, a wish, a belief, a hope, and if you put it out there as something tangible, physical, if you see it, you can believe in it, and then you can achieve it. So with that in mind, we were thinking, what if we put together a NFL vision board for 2021? Things that we really just want to see. We want it. And we'll put together a collage. We're not doing our own vision board. This is the Around the NFL podcast vision board for 2021. Keep it in 2021. We're looking ahead to this season. And let's get going. Greg, I want you to start off the artwork here.
Like, I want you to imagine, if you're listening to this, Greg, we have a big piece of paper here, and Greg is, you know, cut out something. This is a lot of cutouts and quotes from magazines. Greg has cut out like the picture and like his vision. This, he's putting the first piece of
this. He's got the glue stick out
onto the board. It's beautiful.
He's got the big white board that he got from Blick's art gallery or art supplies. And Greg, just so you know, to take it a little further, he's wearing overalls, no shirt underneath, one of the overalls undone. So you see, maybe even a little nipples popping out, and he's got a bandana. Okay, barefoot too, barefoot.
Corduroy overalls.
Delectable.
Shout out to mid-90s women's fashion. Love that stuff.
I was thinking like Demi Moore and Ghost.
I'm thinking, yeah, more just like high school girlfriends and stuff. I mean, I did. I was a big fan. I cut out a picture. And it's just of one man, one NFL player, and it's a picture of Justin Herbert pre-haircut, cocking back to throw a nice pass, and I cut around it, putting that in the corner here. And for me, I looked at this more like a personal vision board, not what I want to see, but more what I want out of my 2021. And Herbert to me represents the love of the game, that I just love watching this guy play. So whether it's with this podcast or with our writing or with our TV stuff, I just want to like tap into that.
Because future drafts for preview shows.
Absolutely. Just like he's the guy to me that connects me. And I'm not saying it's all about Herbert. It's just what he represents. He's the guy that connects me, especially last year, which was not an easy NFL season for anyone. But he was the one last season that sort of connected me and kept me close to that love of the game and just love of the sport. And so for me, that's like what he represents, and I'm putting on the vision board.
I like it.
I like that. I love it. And Herbert was, yes, a shining star this season. And it's funny because we, much hand-wringing, and the Chargers do still absolutely have their work cut out for them and really carving out a niche in this market. And we'll see once people are going and actually going back to the stadiums what kind of crowds they draw. But one of the things that everybody was hammering over and over again, like, who is the star that you can sell the Chargers in Los Angeles on? Well, here he is. He comes in. You nailed the draft pick. You absolutely nailed that draft pick. And Dolphins fans are nodding their heads solemnly. And now you have to hope that he just continues to build off that season. All right, I'll go next. I got to be totally honest with you. I'm struggling with this because this whole thing around my team with the quarterback.
Well, first of all, what are you wearing?
I'll let you decide. But while you think, or unless you have something.
You do your thing and I'll ponder it.
All right. So I know, like, Greg, what you're saying about Darnold makes so much sense logically. It really does. That what he's put on tape over three seasons is more than enough evidence that the Jets, if they have a chance to move him off the roster for a nice draft pick and start fresh, do it. I know that. And I also know from years of history as a fan that whenever I fall for a quarterback, inevitably they let me down. And the belief I had, and most recently, I would say Mark Sanchez, even Ryan Fitzpatrick going into his second season there, you know, Browning Nagel. You go up and down the list. You could find so many guys. Bryce Petty, I even harbored some thoughts about. Never the kid from Penn State, it should be said. Never thought he could play.
Hackenberg, come on.
Yeah, Hackenberg.
Respect that man.
So, you know, it's like I tend to fall in love with the idea of the young savior, and then I get let down. So Darnold was, to me, the biggest chance, a number three overall pick. So I should not be cutting out his photo right now in Jets green and white and putting him on the vision board. And yet, I am. Because in my vision, all this talk for people that understand the quarterback position of the sport that think he could play and just got the rawest of raw deals, why wouldn't I take the number two overall pick? And instead of taking another swing in the draft, why wouldn't I rebuild the roster with massive smart trades with a GM I trust? You have the Falcons picking at four. You have the Eagles at six. You have the Panthers at eight. All teams, and I'm just naming three logical ones, that would die to get into number two and take a young quarterback like a Zach Wilson or a Justin Fields or what have you. And then I could use that bounty over the next couple of years to build a monster roster and then give Sam Darnold a chance with a better coach and a better offense. And here's the kicker here, and I'll shut up in a second. If Darnold stinks this year, it doesn't sink the franchise necessarily. You still have two first-round picks at least next year, and you could then try to address things. My vision is Sam Darnold's there with a much better roster and a real shot. And I know it's not the right way to look at things, but I can't help but think that makes sense for this team given their dearth of talent.
I love it because I think you have to factor in what I think is going to be a coach of the year type coaching staff with Robert Saleh and Mike LaFleur. Just look what the Niners accomplished on offense when Jimmy G went down. I think that the way that they treat the quarterback and in the run game and everything else, I mean, the Jets don't have all those pieces, but there are some mock drafts out there that have the Jets moving down a bit and taking like the number one tight end in the draft, which is a key position
for that.
I'm not saying that it's just
but
that
I saw
your,
that too.
But,
I think
but to your Michelle. Theory, yeah. though, that maybe you just don't assess into everything about Sam Darnold based on the train wreck he's been, that he barely survived, that maybe there is a new life for him. And I think that's an interesting idea.
This is where sharing the vision board is.
It's problematic.
You know, it's complicated. Like, because if Dan comes down and, you know, checks out the vision board in the middle of the night and someone slashed Darnold's like face, it's like, everyone's going to look at me. You know, everyone's going to look at me.
I know. But like I said, I'm not disagreeing with you. Everything you're saying makes sense. But there is a case to be made on my side of things.
Well, if I want to be real, if I want to be real, like as a Patriots fan, yes, do that. That's my vision, too. That's kind of what I would hope for.
Oh, I would love for Darnold to be good. That would be so amazing.
He'll be fine. We've done this long enough that it's like I never feel that confident in anything. But like he can be fine. But like,
I mean,
what
Jets quarterback
the
sucking has always typically been as safe as it gets.
Right. What are the odds of him being a top five quarterback ever? That seems like a big reach to me. That's my thing.
All right, top five. That's pretty hardcore. I mean, I would take top 10. But that's a big reach right now, too. All right.
It's a big reach.
Mark.
By the way,
Dan, what I was wearing, by the way?
Well, I don't have a full picture, but I know that you're wearing one of those things that became popular like 8 or 9 years ago at live games or in other scenarios where like a grown man would wear like the giant furry animal on his head. Remember that whole movement? I don't know what happened with that, but I'd see you in that with like a nice Tito's and soda.
No, I've got it. You're actually wearing the same t-shirt you're wearing now, just, you know, plain nice t-shirt. But then you're wearing Jams shorts. You guys remember Jams?
Oh, Jams. Oh, yeah. That was like half my wardrobe back
like
in the day.
Really, really bright color shorts. That's what
maybe like a Swatch watch on his wrist.
Wearing a Swatch. Now we'll throw it to you, Mark. I already know what you're wearing. This also became popular about 10 years ago at sporting events. In fact, that's where I thought you were going. Remember when guys started showing up in the full green body spandex, including the head? And they would
That's what I'm wearing.
they'd be nude underneath, and it would just be like nothing left to the imagination, and even your face is covered in this green spandex outfit. That's what you're doing in your private home while you're putting together your vision board.
I mean, I see Greg's face right now, but I'm concerned that part of me really likes that concept and idea. I don't know if I like it hanging out with the three of us, but it's compelling.
Could get you arrested, but it's what you like. It's what makes you feel safe.
All right. Well, I'll take your word on that. But mine is, you know, some of these vision boards, they've got, you know, there's a verbal, there's a word aspect to it because it's something you want to just remember in your head. And I previously banned this phrase, but I'm going to unban it in this one situation because I think it's a powerful reminder of where Aaron Rodgers could be in the future. And here's the thing. It's a cutout. The word is my office for the day. And the cutout is SoFi Stadium. And it's Aaron Rodgers making it clear in his mind from here to the end that he will be playing in the Super Bowl next year in SoFi Stadium, that there is no other destination for Aaron Rodgers. So when I talk about every Sunday, my office for the day.
What a 180 this is. I love it.
Well, because look, I think at this point, there were times when I was annoyed by the whole Aaron Rodgers thing, mainly because people just like fast-tracked the Packers to the Super Bowl in every prediction all the time, and they would invariably crumble in the NFC title game. And you know, I've mentioned it before, it's like every January you have like Dom Capers and his hair flying up in the booth as the defense is crumbling and the offense can't do anything about it. Well, things are a little different. This team is different.
I mean, they just lost two NFC championships in a row, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, this time around,
if Patton had hair, his hair would have been flying up in some of these big games.
This time around, it is seek and destroy. And my office for the day is where he will get to when he gets that promotion to the right place he should be working, which is SoFi Stadium in January. And he, every Sunday until then, he's going to have to be a businessman with his briefcase. He's going to have to prepare his documents, file his reports, do it well, be a guy that shows up all day long, and you wind up in L.A., next February, winning the Super Bowl and putting that narrative that he's one of these quarterbacks that's going to go down with just one Lombardi trophy to bed.
I like when you, because I obviously can't do the same thing. I like when you rein yourself in and you say, I'm not going to talk about the Browns, and then I'm going to pretend like I'm rooting for anyone else, including Aaron Rodgers. I like that.
Well, I feel like last year they
could play them against each other. Then you would root for the Browns. It's fine.
I don't know. He really seems to be into Aaron Rodgers.
Well, they
now.
Do play each other next year, so that'll be part of the journey.
Cut to week 4, Mark flaming Aaron Rodgers and the Packers for some reason. I don't know why, but it'll happen.
Wait, Mark, while we're here, because you did have some really strong takes on this, and I hope you don't rein it in on the podcast, the engagement with the actress Cheyenne Woodley of Big Little Lies and many other projects. Very talented woman. Your thoughts on the pending nuptials?
I just have questions. I'd like to learn a lot more. It feels to me, I know nothing. So let's start right there. I'm not coming at you with information. It just feels to me.
Seem pretty certain on text.
No, it feels a little suspicious that, you know, there's all this thing about they met during the pandemic. She's never heard of football, which is fine. That's fine. That part of it, I don't know. But it's just like when I think of Aaron Rodgers and everything about him, like what about what she said about him is how they link up. I would love to hear. And Erica, if you cut this for social, I will drive my car off a cliff. So don't even think about it. I'd love to know Erica's take on this too. But like, am I wrong? Does this seem like, oh yeah, of course. This makes total sense. They didn't even know each other 5 months ago or whatever, and now they're like. And when I want to know more. I'll leave it at that. And I probably was a little stronger on text.
You were, yeah. Your texts were very.
That was totally different.
Am I like a lone wolf with this?
It's a total publicity move.
I mean, that's how I feel.
I mean, he's dated famous people, but that's the circle he's in. You know, let people love. You know, Colleen and Gonzo, they were famous people in Philly. They moved in after 3 months. They were telling.
They've made it work.
I got engaged about as quick as Rodgers.
I mean, this is
did.
The classic situation where Greg makes friends and I burn bridges, and I just it's unappealing.
Well, yeah, me and Woodley are gonna be, you know, hitting the par three.
Well, she doesn't know what that is. She's like, he's a football guy. It's like, come, okay, please.
What is the Ricky, you would know. This is the type of thing I feel like you would know. What is that celebrity dating site?
Oh, Raya.
Raya. So there's this site that you have to get invited to, and it's basically a housing area for wealthy slash well-known people. What's that?
It's Tinder for so you have to get verified. You have to be accepted.
Basically.
I got on it a couple of years ago, actually. Somehow I got invited.
I don't think they're getting Woodley Rogers level people.
The bar's not that high.
Rogers is watching Divergent one night, and he's just like texts his agent, "Hey, can you get me her agent's number or whatever?" You know, that's got to be it.
Okay, I'm just saying, what if he was on Raya? I don't know. Maybe that's where they met. I don't know.
John
Mayer
on there.
See,
Ricky, who did you see when you were scrolling? Or were you swiping?
Yeah.
Like, who would you not?
How did you get in, by the way?
Right.
With all due respect.
Yeah, someone gave me like an in. I was like referred to by someone, like a YouTuber that has a trillion followers. So I like got on through an invite. And I saw John Mayer. I saw Kehlani. I saw Raven Simone. I saw a couple of other like guitarists that you would recognize.
Guitarists.
Yeah.
I mean, did you interact or date or DM?
None of them matched me back, which is really sad.
It's like right.
It's one thing.
Shocking.
It's one thing to see them, but then Raya. Yeah, Richie Sambora wasn't like, "Hey, got to check this lady out."
It was such a random guitarists.
They're like rock stars and like losers too. Like, "Oh, I'm a Vine star with a million followers." It's like, get out of here. But here I am, like,
yeah, pot calling kettle. Yeah. But all right. All right. Well, Mark, that was good. No, I'm just saying. It's like,
no, it's true. It's true. Yeah. It's true. But like, why wouldn't John Mayer like be intrigued? Like, I'm just like a little nobody who's like fun to be around. Like, maybe,
it's an immense mystery.
Yeah, maybe
John Mayer. What are you doing on that site, bro? I mean, come on.
I mean, hey.
I guess he's just owning his whole thing. All right. Does anybody else have anything I want to add to the vision board? Thank you, Ricky. Before we go.
I will not dive into them, but I have a couple taglines for a couple quick taglines that would take no more than 20 seconds, if you'd be interested.
I have another one to add to the board, if you want to do that and then finish by giving us some taglines.
Sure, let's do that.
Okay. I wanted to throw, Greg, and you kind of put this on my radar, and then I did some thinking about it. I want to see, it's a big picture of Greg Gumbel's head, and then surrounding Greg Gumbel's head is just a collection of the most fierce looking wolves that you've ever seen. The wolves, and they had their teeth out, they are not coming at Greg. They're going the other way. They're protecting Greg Gumbel. Because whatever's happening behind this, this used to be the number one guy at CBS, and those days are over. But what they've been doing with this guy, they just let Rich Gannon go, his partner, for the last couple years, I guess it was. Before that, they had tagged him with Bruce Arians, which was, you know, come on now.
It was a three-man booth, but okay.
And Trent Green was in there.
And then before that, Trent Green was there, and they got Trent Green out of there. And it's like, let's get this man out of this abusive cycle where you're pairing him with, like, gimmick hires and quarterbacks from the imperial period of Ludacris. You know, how about we take Jim Nance and his $20 million a year demands, say, go take a hike, go to Amazon, pair Greg with Romo, and for no other reason than just think how many less golf bits we'd have to endure during the middle of huge games. Gumbel, Romo, protect Greg Gumbel, wolves around him. He's safe.
I would only ask, what other bits would we endure, though, in place of the golf bits?
No bits. Gumbel's a pro. He's been doing this for a long time. He's good at his job. Come on now.
He is a professional. There's no question
Greg,
about that.
Why are you making that fit? What do you have
against
Greg?
First of all, the worm has really turned on the Romo thing. People are a little tired of Romo. I'm not. Romo Nance thing. You know. Ball don't lie. I mean, he's fallen down that pecking chart, Greg Gumbel. He had a time at our network. I don't know if you remember that, doing Thursday Night Football.
Ball don't lie?
I don't know. doesn't even really make sense in this context.
No, Mike,
doesn't.
Don't lie.
I don't know. Like CBS executives don't lie, but yeah, I guess they do.
Always.
I don't know. You know, he had his time, and he's still getting those checks. So I would be worried though about who's next up there. Yeah, if you're like, if you're Greg Jennings or whatever, and you're the next partner for Gumbel, then you got to be a little worried.
It's a little bit of a curse situation.
It's a weird thing that you put this on your vision board, but I love it.
Greg or Dan, I wasn't aware that you were such a Greg Gumbel-ophile. I like, based on chatter in our newsroom, and I'm not pegging this on you, I didn't realize anyone was a dyed-in-the-wool Gumbel fan, but he is a professional, no doubt about it. I don't remember how we did on our play-by-play rankings a couple months ago. I don't think he soared into the skies, but...
It's like Greg Jennings is going to come for his first day of work and like, oh, by the way, before you get in the booth, here's this pendant with an ancient like mummy's head on it. You have to wear it all season. It's like, why? Oh, no, don't worry about it. It's definitely not cursed.
And I know Jennings is on Fox. Save your tweets. I should have chosen Jay Feely or something. You know, it's a live show that we're taping here. I'll throw one.
By the way, something like this, Greg, let's not throw Jay Feely out there. Go ahead.
Trying to think of CBS. I have just a phrase for the middle of it. I don't know if I looked at this exercise differently. I was thinking really more personally, but I'm putting that phrase, which I've brought up here on the show.
It's your vision, Greg.
Heed the call, which was something Wes would say to me a lot. Heed the call. It's just a nice, you know, it's not about
right
faith.
In the middle.
Faith or anything, it's, you know, but that you can look at it that way too. You know what's in your heart that you want to do ultimately if you look in far enough. So heed that call.
All right. I like that. And don't put a hashtag heed the call. Let's not heed the call straight up. I like that. And Greg Jennings, if they try to give you a Tiki God pendant, just say, no, that is, I'm not doing it. I'm not wearing this.
so random. Is this the first? We haven't talked to Greg Gumbel in a while. Do you remember that? Yeah, we were not. We did not have a podcast when Greg Gumbel was on NFL Network. Was it Gumbel and Mayock? Was that who was with Mayock?
You predated me in terms of watching NFL Network. To be totally honest with you, I didn't even have NFL Network.
He launched Thursday Night Football. So that was a big spot.
And I thought Mayock was great on it.
That was a big spot for Greg Gumbel at NFL Network.
Yeah, you brought up Wes, and one of the things I would have loved to read a book that Wes would have written, because I think he would have written the next great sports book. If you were ever to write a book, Greg, it would definitely have to be one of those like in-depth breakdowns, like they did like an SNL book, they did These Guys Had All the Fun, the ESPN Ooh. Book. Like an NFL Network oral history. But oral history is even not taking advantage of this because I want Greg's takes in there. I want you to write the tell-all on NFL Network.
I'll put the takes in between, yeah. So stay on my good side, Network, or else I'm coming to you afterwards. And I know all the people to contact. By the way, one of them is not Greg Gumbel. I made the huge Gumbel mistake and confused the two Gumbels.
No.
It was Brian Gumbel.
Real sports is Brian Gumbel?
I knew something was wrong. Wow. Brian Gumbel did launch the NFL Network, and that's why it was, no, you know, with all due respect, I shouldn't say that.
Don't say it. I know exactly where you're going. Don't say that.
I don't respect it. He was great in the studio. Brian Gumbel, not good in the booth. It was a bad choice. So right. His brother Greg is in the booth. Okay. In the booth, Brian, not so much.
Greg's spinning. We're off the rails. All right. Give us some tags, Mark.
All right. And there's a lot to these, but you're going to have to almost imagine what they mean, I guess. But Best Life Unlocked, Matthew Stafford. I mean, you had we're 5 months removed from Mrs. Stafford complaining about Michigan. They're probably like, you know, shoveling their driveways. It's dim and dreary. Now you're in La La Land. I mean,
Michigan's
it's a fantastic.
A nice place, I'm gonna stand for them a little bit.
You what? Wait, I don't understand what you're saying. You agree?
No,
with
I just
my...
don't want that to go unchecked. Michigan's a wonderful place. I know a lot of people love Michigan.
Oh, it's not really a shot at Michigan, but they seem to be tired with it. And I think this is a best life unlocked. They're suddenly, you know, hanging out in Los Angeles, and there's a chance to become a star for the Rams. I like that. Out of a boring situation. How about this? If you're Jared Goff in Detroit, everyone's down on this guy. Time to be a boss boy. And you can paint that all for how you wish. But these are things that I've found on other people's message boards. People are actually using... In that case, it was time to be a boss girl, but he is a boy. So I flipped it.
For some reason, boss girl has a little more pop to it than boss boy.
Maybe just boss.
Well, yeah, some things have more pop than Jared Goff right now. So, I mean, it's, you know, he's
a little emasculating. Boss
boy.
Yeah,
it's almost like a little takedown of the guy.
Well, that wasn't my attempt. The last thing is, he designed a life he loved. Again, she designed a life she loved. But this can be, I think, gender neutral. It's Sean McVay. I think he's boldly sort of said, look, I was the genius boy. And that came with, like, you know, if you ever watched the Royal Tenenbaums, their adult lives were riddled with problems after being the boy geniuses and the girl geniuses in that family. And Sean McVay came in as that guy, as the head coach. Well, these are men. I could get a Sheila Hemp Ford in here for you somewhere if we want.
No, but just the use of boy, it's just coming up a lot. I don't know.
This says he designed a life he loved. Well, yeah, right. He was the boy genius. But I'm just saying that he has boldly sort of said, look, I'm restarting the engine, doing it my way. I'm designing the Rams and the life that I love. And I think that the Rams, if anything, they've kind of said, we don't care how anyone else does it, and you can like it or not. We're starting in a new direction. And they've upped my interest in that team, and that was a chore, I think, on their part to get there.
No, I was just saying, like, just to take the pedal off the accelerator on all the boy stuff, because it might get weird on the vision board if there's just, like, too much stuff, like, boy this, boy that.
Well, that's you know, you could exclude me from the exercise, but I'm allowed to paste what I want onto the board. You've got Greg Gumbel.
It was
Wolves,
your idea. You know? Yeah, it was a good idea. Yeah, Greg Gumbel, not Brian.
Can we put Sean McVay shirtless in the pool? Can that be the picture of him that we cut out and use?
Sure. I don't know if that's exactly the message here, but yes. Again, it's you have freedom to do what you wish as well.
This is yours, though. That's why I don't want
to.
Could
you put it next to my picture of him? Like, I could have him in clothing. You could have him in the pool.
Okay. I hope someone's watching this or listening to this right now, and maybe it shows up on the subreddit. Somebody puts together what this vision board would look like. We will definitely amplify that on social media.
Oh yeah,
a lot of boy stuff.
We're gonna get a lot of contributions there. Just because, by the way, it's been bothering me. I just want to let you know the original NFL Network Thursday night team was Bryant Gumbel and Chris Collinsworth. And so Dick Vermeil replaced Collinsworth on the Saturday games, which I remember was a weird thing. But I stand by my take. Bryant Gumbel was one of the worst play-by-play man I've ever heard. Barely was aware of what was going on in the NFL. Well, killed those broadcasts.
One little note before we get out of here. Like, I'm not standing for the total Bryant Gumbel takedown as someone who's older than you and grew up every morning watching Bryant Gumbel and Jane Pauley. You know, they were the Today Show hosts of choice. And I know Bryant Gumbel, that Sports Illustrated profile they put out about Bryant and Greg Gumbel back in the day was one of the bigger broadcasting takedowns I've ever read. And I would suggest you go find it. Do you guys remember that?
No. I don't remember that one.
Greg, this will essentially be adult reading to you.
He did the game where they went 16-0 over the Giants. That was actually Bryant Gumbel's last game, I believe, with NFL Network. How about that?
Greg is so annoyed that he
so annoyed. Real sports, venerable contribution to the sports world over the last 20 years or so. So
still going strong too.
Certainly.
There is definitely some respect on Bryant Gumbel's name here. But the vision board has Greg with the Wolves and maybe Bryant, like, with his name scratched out. I don't know.
That's right. Respect.
There we go.
Bunch of whippersnappers taking down the Gumbels. This should go well.
All right, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with two shows, including a Monday program. So you'll hear from us next on Monday. Again, a reminder, the Chris Wessling GoFundMe for Lakeisha and Link is active. Please hit it up. And actually, someone just on Twitter this morning had asked me about what kind of books Wes was into. Of course, as you know, Wes wrote an amazing piece about his favorite football books of all time. Check that out. And also, another listener and Wes fan, as we all were, went on Spotify and saw that Wes, his Spotify account, his playlists, and I can't stress this enough, Wes was a music lover as all of us are. But Wes, in his Wes way, was also a curator of playlists that all fit a very specific mindset. And he has 85 playlists available over on Spotify, which you could get if you look him up, contact Wes over there, or just check out my Twitter profile where I have it amplified there. I keep saying amplified. I don't know.
Everything from Steely Dan to Lead Belly, based on what we were listening to over at their place last weekend.
Absolutely. All right. Good stuff. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the old boss, and Ricky Hollywood behind the virtual glass. Oh, Greg. Take down that other suspender. Or what is it? What do they call it? Overalls. Brian Gumbel. That's it. Until Monday.
Suspenders.